Hello, and welcome to On the Right ADHD Trail. This is our fourth summit, and I'm thrilled to have 15 highly educated experts in the ADHD field join me this year. We're going to fill your backpack with tools to help you navigate the daily challenges of living with ADHD. I'm your host, Kathy Gett, owner of Get Focus. I'm a certified ADHD life coach and a certified Sanity School for Parents trainer. You can find out more about me and my coaching practice at www.getfocus.com. That's GOETTFocus.com. Years ago, I realized there was so much information out there for women, but not very much for men. So here we are, climbing the trail for the fourth time, and I couldn't be more excited. But are you already worried how am I going to find the time to listen this weekend? We have the solution for you. Simply upgrade to On the Right ADHD Trail Backpack. For only $85, you have extended digital access to all the recordings, a transcript of our audio interviews, and as a special bonus, you are in the drawing for a $150 gift certificate from REI. Hey, but enough talking. Let's get started and meet our next presenter, Dr. Sharon Saline. Dr. Saline is the author of award-winning book, What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew, Working Together to Empower Kids for Success in School and Life, and the ADHD Solution Card Deck. I recommend both of these very much. She specializes in working with neurodivergent children, teens, young adults, and families, and consults with schools internationally. Dr. Saline aims to help outside-the-box thinkers improve executive functioning and social-emotional skills by also building effective communication tools and self-esteem. Dr. Saline is a part-time lecturer at the Smith College School for Social Work, blogger for psychologytoday.com, contributing expert on Mass Live at WWLP-TV, serves on the editorial board, and hosts a bi-weekly Facebook Live event for attitudemag.com. Dr. Saline is going to talk to us today about Confident and Calmer, How to Reduce Anxiety in Men with ADHD. She was going to tell us about how we will discuss the critical relationship between anxiety and ADHD. She explains how anxiety works in the ADHD brain and body and how it fosters frustrating procrastination and perfectionism. Dr. Saline offers practical, effective tools to reduce anxiety, increase motivation, and improve self-confidence. Welcome, Dr. Saline. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here. And thank you for doing this wonderful work. It's just so important. And I think it's great for men to have a place to go and for the women in their lives as well to learn about ADHD in men.
Absolutely. Well, let's just get started. What are you going to tell us today?
Well, I think what I want to start with are some facts about anxiety. So the statistics are really very interesting. So the rate of anxiety among kids with ADHD is about 34%, but in adults, it climbs to 50%. And according to Dr. Thomas Brown, about one third of adults with ADHD have social anxiety. So when we're talking about anxiety, you know, the question that we want to ask is, you know, well, what is anxiety, Sharon? You know, what does it mean to have anxiety? What does anxiety look like? And how is anxiety impacting you in your everyday life? So let's start with, you know, sort of a definition of anxiety. So anxiety for many people with ADHD comes from, you know, worry about performance difficulties that are specific in nature, which is where they start, and then they can spread to a more general sort of overall type of anxiety. A lot of times people with ADHD, we know, are more easily set off emotionally and experience a flooding more than their peers. And we can see this in both panic and irrational worry, but also in the intensity of their feelings, whether it's about anxiety or depression or anger or joy or anything.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that one. So I've got some clients and they're like, why do I get so much more upset than my friend does about these little things? And it's just like, well, that's just the way your brain reacts and everything.
Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the things that we want to notice is that people with ADHD, kids and adults, of course, sort of live with this sort of constant low level or overt levels of worry about when they're going to make their next mistake or let someone down or they won't be liked in a situation. There's concern about both disappointing others, but also about disappointing themselves.
Yes, absolutely. So how does this anxiety actually affect the ADHD brain?
Well, I think that's really interesting. So it affects the ADHD brain in that, the amygdala, which is our fight, flight, or fear response, has been found to be somewhat oversensitive a lot in people with ADHD. And so you'll get these intense reactions. We also want to understand that, of course, anxiety is all about safety and security, and it wants to make uncomfortable feelings and uncertainty go away immediately. So what happens in the ADHD brain is that there is this, kind of quicker process of both triggering and flooding, so that the brain will and the body are now coursing with, adrenaline or norepinephrine and cortisol, however you want to call it, and then we start to tense our muscles, we might clench our jaw, we might start to cry. There are all kinds of responses we have when we're worked up like that. And so what we want to try to do is to learn how to notice the trigger and choose a different response rather than that automatic response. How are we going to slow things down? Now, because we're not going to get rid of anxiety. Anxiety is adaptive and it helps our bodies prepare for real danger. But the thing about anxiety is that there is a false alarm, episodes of fear or worry in the absence of a genuine threat. Sometimes the concern is real, but the reaction, again, is disproportionate. And so it's that all or nothing thinking and a negative expectancy, which anxiety naturally has. And then people with ADHD who tend to be black and white thinkers who may struggle with working memory, which is directly related to emotional control, can have a hard time calling up, what is the response that I said I was going to do when this happened last time? Or how did I deal with this 3 weeks ago? Because this feels kind of similar to that. They can't quite get that to happen, and so they sort of flounder.
Okay, yeah, that's true, that black and white thought of it's either right or it's either wrong. There is no middle ground or anything. Well, can you describe the relationship between anxiety, procrastination, and perfectionism? Because I really, really see that in my clients. Mm-hmm. And procrastination stops them. I mean, they can't get going. But the perfectionism sometimes is even worse than the procrastination. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like
absolutely. So procrastination is a manifestation of anxiety, right? I'm worried that I'm not going to be able to do this thing, or that it's not going to work out for me, or the last time I did something like this, it really, bombed. I don't trust myself or my resources or my abilities to make something happen. And so I'm going to engage in a whole lot of different delay tactics to do that. Now, perfectionism, is related to anxiety because perfectionism, it can be, really motivating. And that's the sort of positive aspect, the productive side of worry, and it's kind of the productive side of perfectionism. I want something to be a particular way, so I'm motivated to start it, or I really want to get all the details right, and I'm enjoying the process of, making that happen. But perfectionism can also be really debilitating, because if everything isn't just the way you want it to be, then you don't maybe turn the project in, or you don't get started because you can't actually do it at it to the level that you want to. And so then you're kind of, you know, just in a no person's land of I know what I wanted what to do, but I don't have confidence that I can do it in the way that I want, so I'm just not going to do it. And then there are other types of procrastination too. You know, there's avoidance procrastination. I see this task as enormous. It's Mount Everest. I don't know where to start. I don't expect it to be pleasant, and I'm just, you know, turning around and going the other direction.
Right, right. And I don't expect to do a perfect job, so why should I even try?
Or I'm not sure I can even do a good enough job.
Right.
And then, you know, of course, then there's productive procrastination, which is like doing something else instead of the thing that you have to do. So many people with ADHD are very good at that, and many people without ADHD are good at that too. You know, I'm going to throw in the laundry and wipe the kitchen counters instead of working on my PowerPoint that's due tomorrow.
Right. Or the taxes or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly.
So why is a growth mindset an important tool for managing anxiety?
It's a great question. So a growth mindset is all about living and learning. So as opposed to a fixed mindset, which says, you know, my traits, my behaviors, they're just the way they are, they're not going to improve, nothing's going to help. A growth mindset says, I'm going to try something. I'm going to see what happens. Maybe it works out partially. Great, that's good information. Maybe it works out the whole way. Great, that's fantastic information. I'm going to realize that part of living is stumbling, and I may stumble, and that's okay. Everybody does, instead of what people with ADHD do, which is that I'm stumbling, so I clearly must really be stupid or unpopular or whatever negative adjective you want to throw in there. So we really want to try to help people with ADHD learn how to have a growth mindset, how to basically identify their strengths and grow them, build their interests, figure out strategies for doing things that don't naturally interest them, because then they're going to otherwise procrastinate and maybe not get it done or use any of the different kinds of procrastination techniques, you know, perfectionism, avoidance, or productive, rather than getting to the thing that has to be done. So really what we're talking about here, Kathy, is building resilience, the belief that you can grow and learn along the way. So I like to say two steps forward and one step back is still forward motion.
Right. I like that, two steps forward. Yep, that's what it is. Talking to a lot of people, like, oh, wait a minute, I feel like I'm just losing it. No, you're making a few steps, but not as many as you want, but you're making some and everything.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add to this? We're getting
well. I think that it's really important for people to learn how to talk back to the anxiety that's in their head. Because a lot of times what we do is we believe that we are our anxiety, and really our anxiety is just a loud, noisy part. You know, it's not who we are. And so, you know, can help to name it. You know, one of my clients calls his anxiety, you know, stupid Steve, and then there's a more positive, smart Steve. And so, you know, stupid Steve says things like, I'm stupid. I'm not going to get this right. I'm worried that things aren't going to work out because, you know, I'm unreliable, or didn't pay my parking tickets for 2 years and my car got impounded, whatever it is, you know. And so we really want to be able to kind of really identify that part of ourselves that is so negative and learn how to talk back to it.
Is that sort of like the gremlin that's on your shoulder?
Exactly. Exactly. It's definitely the gremlin that's on your shoulder.
And yeah, I've told my clients to, you know, draw a picture of your gremlin so you can really, you know, get to know this person and everything and work with it. But yeah, That's right. You're talking back to that anxiety. Well, I think there's something else you wanted to tell us about the.
Oh, I have a I have a free gift. It's a downloadable on managing anxiety. It's called You Can't Stop Anxiety, You Can Change Your Relationship to It. And that's something that everybody will get a copy of when they download it. And I would like to tell you how to stay in touch with me. I have a website, www.drsharonsaline.com. I'm also, of course, on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and Twitter. And I also do a lot of work for attitudemag.com, including Facebook Live sessions. So if you're interested in you know, having me answer your question or getting to know me better, please also join me there.
Okay. But what about the five C's of ADHD?
Ah, such a good question. Yes, thank you. I did not bring that up. So part of my approach is, you know, key to my approach is called the five C's of ADHD. And the five C's of ADHD, the first C is self-control. We are going to manage ourselves first. We're going to figure out what helps soothe us, what helps us slow down, what we need to recalibrate when we're triggered. The second C is compassion. And this is where we treat ourselves with self-compassion. We actually acknowledge, you know, who we are without blame or shame. And we talk to ourselves in a way that we would talk to a third grader with a skinned knee instead of the way you, you know, the bully in your head or that gremlin on your shoulder is talking to you. The third C, yes, go ahead, Kathy.
I feel like we don't know how to do that, to give ourselves compassion when we mess up, when we mistake. We just beat ourselves up, and I really like it that you talk about giving yourself the compassion. You would do it for a friend, so why don't you do it for yourself?
Exactly. So the things that we say to our friends are things we don't say to ourselves, and I'm guilty of this too. You know, I can be pretty tough on myself, and it's exhausting. So, you know, I really need to remember to try to talk to myself like I would talk to a third grader with a skinned knee.
That's okay.
I'd be a lot nicer to the third grader.
We would, wouldn't we?
We would. The third C is collaboration. And this is when we actually, you know, gather up our courage and we ask for help. That we join with others to assist us in doing things. You know, there's this belief that somehow we have to do everything on our own. And the fact is we can't. So if we can't do everything on our own, that's okay. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you or you're a bad person. It means you can't do everything on your own. And frankly, no one really can. So we want to, you know, get some help with things that were, that are challenging for us. And we also want to acknowledge that it's going to be hard for us to do things that aren't inherently interesting or rewarding because people with ADHD have lower amounts of dopamine. So we almost want to collaborate with ourselves in a way by using incentives. So we put the have to's, I have to do the dishes before I'm going to watch, you know, the latest episode of Perry Mason. I'm sort of addicted to that, on HBO. And by the time people hear this, that show may have long come and gone. But, you know, that we want to set things up for ourselves that way so we know that we do the icky thing and then we get the good thing. That helps. And, of course, that's important for teaching kids, too. The fourth C is consistency. And this gets mixed up a lot with perfection, right? You know, we have to get it right because that's what being consistent is. And, you know, for me, I say no. Being consistent is about steadiness because no one is perfect. And if you're aiming for perfection, it's going to be a long, long, frustrating battle. It's like you're going to be Sisyphus pushing that boulder up the hill in the myth. So instead we want to aim for steadiness. And to have, there might be an exception here and there, but the idea is that most of the time, you know, more often than not, You know, occasionally I'm late, but more often than not, I'm on time. For me, what used to be, I was more often late, and I've changed that a lot. I'm more often on time because it's important to me. So that's the goal with consistency. And then so part of that is about also efforting. So not expecting yourself to, you know, do it right the first time, but to acknowledge that change is a process. And, you know, rather than trying, which is a little bit of a toss-off, efforting is, for people who are neurodivergent, it's a full-body experience. It's your body, your brain, and your emotions. And they all work together to get you to attempt something, you know, with serious effort and concentration. And then
I love that you said it was a full body effort, because I think people with the typical brain do not realize how someone with a neurodiversified brain really have to work with the body, with the brain, with everything. It's a real, real challenge. So I really appreciate that you said that.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. Right. And I think that a lot of times people are like, oh, you could just go ahead and do it. And I'm like, well, if we could just go ahead and do it, we would.
Right.
Like, if I could just manage my anxiety better, I would. But I struggle with that. So don't tell me to do that way. Like, you know, one thing my father does, he's alive, he's 90, but, you know, he's like, oh, just don't think about that. I'm like, sure. That's really going to work. Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Right.
The last C is celebration. And this isn't about baking yourself a cake because you did the laundry. It's really acknowledging and validating both your efforts. Like, I'm trying to change. I wasn't completely on time, but instead of being 20 minutes late, I was only 10 minutes late. That's a big improvement for me. So we're acknowledging that. And we're also validating our efforts. Like, the reason that I was able to do that was because I set these two timers, so that is working for me. If I want to be, you know, cut that extra 10 minutes off, maybe I need, you know, an even earlier timer. And we're going to validate ourselves. Like, I actually turned my taxes in. Bravo for me. I'm going to do something nice for myself.
There you go. And I think that's really important, because I think what we always focus on is what we didn't do, how horrible we were. Well, why can't we celebrate these little things that we did do right? You know, that's the little things to start building up, to start making you feel really good about yourself, where we really struggle with that and everything. That's what I'm always telling my students. Celebrate this little win. You know, it doesn't have to be the end of the semester, but look what you did with this test, or, you know, whatever. So anyway,
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Because a lot of times, if we don't acknowledge that small win, no one's going to do it for us. You know, no one's going to come up to you and say, like, oh, hey, you know what? Nice job on being here only 10 minutes late.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But you tried.
But I tried. You know, I really tried. It was better than it was before.
Well, we just have a few minutes left, but do you want to tell them anything about your book, What's Your ADHD Wishes You Knew, Working Together to Empower Kids for Success in School and Life?
Well, thank you so much for asking about that. So I have a book that I wrote. It's coming up on its fifth anniversary. It's hard for me to believe that. And I also have a card deck called the ADHD Solution Deck, which was written for parents and kids, but it's actually great for adults too. I mean, the quotes are often from some parents and kids, but it's totally valuable for adults. And then I have a lot of articles that I've written about adult ADHD in various locations, whether it's on Attitude or in Attention Magazine. You know, if you go to my website, you can find something that relates to you as an adult with ADHD as well.
Well, thank you so much. Sharon, you've just given us a wealth of information. Thank you so much for becoming today. And is there anything else you need to say to wrap us up?
I just want to say thank you so much, Kathy, for inviting me. It's wonderful to talk to you. And I want people to know that if you have anxiety, and many people with ADHD live with anxiety, many, you are not alone. And there's nothing to be ashamed of. This is how your brain is wired. And I think particularly as we get older, it can be more challenging to manage our anxiety. So reach out, maybe talk to someone, a coach or a therapist, that can help you set up some systems in your life that would reduce some of the pressure and the anxiety that you're putting on yourself.
Right. Use some collaboration of that 5 C's of ADHD and give yourself some compassion also. Well, thank you so much.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Kathy. I really appreciate talking with you. And thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Yes. Thank you. And just hang in there, and we will be back with our next guest. Thank you so much, audience. Bye-bye. Okay. That was good.